This is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Thank you. So first off, I'd like to thank you all for being here today, particularly in this room, because I know that some of my colleagues are actually presenting some amazing results from some of our studies. So you must be super keen, is all I can say. Okay, so why start a research program and how do you do it? So last year I was in England with my family on a holiday and we were at an international horse show watching some show jumping. And like every good Yorkshire woman, you know, I love baking, I love cakes. And one of the commentators said of one of the show jumpers, well, he's got all the ingredients, he just needs to learn how to bake the cake. So I thought, that's curious. So for you guys as emergency care workers, I was thinking, well, what would it be? What would it be that you needed to know to give you the ingredients and the recipe to start upon this journey of building a research program? And why? Well, do you know what? Pediatric emergency medicine is quite a new phenomenon in its own right. And not only that, but paediatric emergency research is really super new. So there are all these questions. And, you know, research, doing research, especially when you're all super busy, and I acknowledge that the emergency departments are, you know, stretched everywhere in Australia and New Zealand at the minute, but that's not going to change. And then we go, oh, by the way, would you mind just doing this bit of extra work? You know, could you just fill out this paperwork? Would you mind speaking to this family? But in the back of my head, I can't help but think, but it must be really more annoying when you go into families, when you're going to speak to people, and you actually don't have the answers for them. Because there's all of these questions still kicking around and really relevant key questions like what we've got up here today that still need answering. So how do you start? Where do you even turn? So one thing that I've learnt along my research career is don't go left field. You know, don't make it hard for yourself. So organisations will have their own ideas about what research should be conducted there, and they'll have their own, you know, target strategic plans for that type of thing. And funding bodies do as well. So align yourself with that in the first instance. Don't go left field, because one, you're probably unlikely to get a grant, and you're not going to get the support right from the outset from your organisation, like Sarah mentioned. And don't bite off more than what you can chew. Just take little tiny bite-sized pieces at the start. Do what's manageable for you, for your department, and start small, because honestly, before you know it, you start with one project and then you've got 10 and you're like, oh my God, like how did that even happen? So when you don't know where to start in the first instance, so some of you were in the room probably thinking, look, I know I need to do research. It's part of my college accreditation, or I've got to like think of some, you know, project for my uni, and you're going, I don't even have a question. Like, I'm sat in this room, I don't even have a question. Well, thankfully, some clever bods have had a look into this for you. So the Predict Research Network did a Delphi study a couple of years ago, and they looked at physicians' research priorities for emergency medicine in Australia and New Zealand. So it's a super document to read. And then just hot off the press, Julie Considine and her group have actually drilled this down a bit further and had a look at nursing research priorities. The top one being detection of clinical deterioration is of super concern to nurses working in our emergency department. So if you don't know where to start, grab these documents, have a look. It will line you up well for any funding applications, because the funding bodies read these things. And if, you know, if one of the projects is of fancy to you, I would say go forth and do it. So this is going to be like your least favourite part. There's always a bit of a process with any research. And we're just not good at it. So, you know, we're used to working in these fast-paced environments, our attention spans short, and then someone says, you've got to sit down and go through this really lengthy process, which actually might take you 6 years to complete. But what I would say to you is there are people that are actually good at this in your organisation, so tap into them, and I'll allude to that a little bit further on the next slide. So you need to engage with your teams right from the start, like Sarah has mentioned. You need to work up your study, your project design. There's a process of going through ethics, funding. Some research can be done without funding, but it is difficult and it's really hard. So if you've got a grant, it just buys out your time or someone else's time and just makes things happen that bit quicker. There's a governance process where you might be going through contractual agreements, site approval for your own site, and then you go live. So teams. Teams are really important. Who is it that you need to help you along this journey? Like, where are your own holes, and who's going to plug them in for you? So within my own team, I've got nurses, I've got admin officers, I've got medical students, and I've got doctors. And they all bring something different to the table. The med students surprise me with their IT skills, which often I'm tapping into, going, how do I even work this on Excel? But yeah, building your team right from the outset, knowing which people you need to wrap around you is going to help you no end along the way. Okay, so you need to remember along this journey to preheat the oven. And by preheat the oven, I mean forward plan, think ahead. So if you're building a research program, you need money, you need people. So what grants are going to be available to you over the next 12 months, 18 months, 24 months? What staff are you going to need and what infrastructure? So one of the biggest things that I've had to do in my role in Queensland is help health services set up that research infrastructure. So sometimes they'll get a collaborative grant and they'll go, super. And then I'll say, so who are you going to employ and how? And they go, oh, well, that's curious. So one thing right from the outset that you need to set up is a research cost centre. They're really important to be set up in the correct way so the funds roll over from year to year and don't get sucked into the abyss at the end of the financial year. Within your research cost centre, you'll need to set up positions that you can appoint into, because too often we sit with monies and we're not actually able to employ the staff to, you know, to get going with projects. So for my department, we have a range of nursing positions and administration positions so we can put the best fit people into the job. And then on the back of that, you need to work out your governance. So, you know, we don't want 20 projects all starting at once in the emergency department, because we're not going to be anyone's friend doing that. So setting up a governance process for your own units is really important. So in my unit, what we do is we have a monthly meeting where we cap over projects that are already underway, we review any new projects, and then specifically we're looking at departmental impact. So we might say that's a great project, and that one's great, and that one's great, but we actually need to stagger the start dates. Or that one right now is a priority because it's, you know, bronchiolitic infants and we're about to go into winter. So let's put that one first. And then sometimes, you know what, you just have to, like, hook in. It can be messy. You might make mistakes along the way, but you're going to learn. You're going to get feedback. I remember my first ethics application, no live a word, it must have come back to me 8 times, and now I sit on an ethics committee, which is another good suggestion. If you really don't know what you're doing, join the committee, because you get a whole heap of training, and then, you know, you see it totally from the other side, so that's been invaluable. And your own ethics committees will put out expressions of interest, you know, for specialists along the way, so look out for it. So you do really well. You get one project going, and you're like, whoa, that's super. And then all of a sudden, you've got, like, I don't know even how many is there, 50 projects going, you're going, oh my goodness. So it looks spectacular, and it could be like, wow, look at this. I started here, I had one project, I've got this whole research program. But you know what? Life's a balance. And what I've learnt in my department is that if we overburden the clinical staff, they totally disengage from research. So there's a couple of strategies that we do to tackle this. One thing is, don't tell them about stuff that they just don't need to know about. So we've got 22 projects, but only 6 recruiting in the emergency department at the moment. So we brief the staff on them, we load them up with education, where they might have to grab a randomization envelope, they might have to do something with the patient. But the fact that we're doing all of these retrospective chart reviews in the background is of absolutely no relevance to the clinical staff. Yes, they'd like to know the outcomes, but the registry work, the chart reviews, we just don't need to overburden the staff with. The other thing too is tailoring your education. So for example, we've got some studies that are just going on in the resuscitation area of RED. We do not need to educate the whole of the department. So it's specific to those nurses or doctors that are going to be working in that area. Well, there are always flames in research. So do you know what? We're challenging often preconceived ideas. We're, you know, loading up clinicians with all of this extra work, you know, and you're going to have to learn how to navigate this and at times douse those flames. But you will learn from it along the way. We're really open. So our research meeting that we host every month is open for the ongoing projects. If anyone's got an issue, they can come and talk to us about it and we can try and iron things out. And yeah, you learn and move on. But remembering who it's all about, why we're doing this in the first place, is really key. And that's key to keeping your staff continually on board as we throw project after project at them. So I'd like to just give you now a little real life story. So a couple of years ago, I was asked to go down to another emergency department in a regional facility, mixed ED, with a super keen clinician that said, want to do some paediatric research. And I said, okay, you know, what do we need to do? How can we help? So there was literally nothing, just this one clinician. And we said, right, okay, let's see how we can start. So what we did was we thought, and one of my earlier slides was just take small bites. So I suggested to them that they link in with a larger study. So some of the PREDICT studies that a lot of you in the room are probably familiar with, the advantage of being part of a larger study is that they do the ethics for you, the protocol's already written, and all you have to do is site-specific stuff in relation to your own area. So we thought, actually, that's a really good idea to as a first step. So we took on board 2 projects, and throughout the onboarding process of those, we realised that we're a whole heap of holes in the system. I mean, there was no governance, we had no cost centres, we couldn't employ anyone, so we fixed all that up. And we employed a super keen nurse who had no research experience at all, but her heart was in the right place and she was keen to learn. So she's come on board with us and we've mentored her along the way. And the first cherry on the top of that cake is the fact that one study led to another, and this department now have got 6 paediatric studies currently recruiting in their ED. And last year they were successful in being the lead applicants for a grant for a 5-site study in Queensland. So that was amazing for everyone involved and for the clinicians. And, you know, that's just with 3 people really driving this. And then I have to tell you, because I'm a bit excited, then this week, the nurse who literally knew nothing about research has actually just applied for 2 grants this week as PI. She's collaborating with a university, the Menzies Institute, and 2 hospital and health services. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed and wishing her all the very best of luck. So sometimes you just have to dive in, give it a go. It's honestly not that bad. And here's my recipe. So decide on the bake. What's meaningful to you? What's meaningful to your organisation? What's meaningful to your funding bodies? Gather the ingredients, get that team behind you, and forward plan. Mix it all up, see what works, see what doesn't work in your departments. And then at some point, you just have to go live and go with it. Bake that cake. Pray it rises along the way. And, you know, right now, I'm sure that the nurse I was just talking about is praying it rises and that she has a successful grant. And most importantly, when it all comes together, enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So much cake. let's find out about Twitter, because I think we've got some questions.
Yes. So a lot of people once again retweeting your pearls. And we've got a question from Eunicia. I apologise if I pronounced your name wrong there. But she says that she works in a very busy ED with an annual census of 100,000. Traditionally, it's very service-driven and has a limited research focus. So what strategies could you suggest to help embed a culture of research in such a department?
Mm-hmm. So I would say, like what I mentioned before, tagging into a bigger project where you actually get that peer support around you would be how I would start. And everyone thinks that, you know, the tertiary facilities, well, you know, it's this whole research department. So I'm at Lady Cilento Children's Hospital, and we've, as I said, we've got 22 research projects. So there is me. I've got two part-time research nurses and one admin officer. So these teams are not huge teams. It just takes individuals that are there and your department on board to help you drive these projects forward. So it doesn't have to be a whole team of personnel. And I think people get floored by that. They think that there's like a whole crew of us. And you know, the reality is that there just isn't.
Does anyone have a question in the room? I've got a question.
Sure.
Give us, seeing as we've got you here, we'll pick your brain. What would be your red hot tip for anyone preparing their ethics committee application?
Yeah. Okay. Speak to the ethics committee early. Mm. So they're there to help you. So it doesn't matter where you are. The ethics committee often will have online resources and an educational training that you can tap into prior to any submission. Because I'm on an ethics committee myself, we actually sometimes, you know, when someone goes, oh, I've never done this before, we say, give us a half a pager of what you're thinking about and we'll feed back to you before you start your application, just so people don't get off on the wrong path at the start.
Sorry. So this is very dear to my heart. I'm like one of that keen clinician in a larger institution. Mm-hmm. In practical terms, so you're here now, which is amazing, but if I was, say, in Queensland, how would I know that you exist? How would I find you? So I'm not in Queensland, I'm from New South Wales, but there must be people like you in my state. Where do I start?
Well, so in Queensland, we've done a whole heap of work, and literally I go in person to the departments. And when I started in the role, like we did a huge mail out to everyone. Well, just a couple of months ago, I spoke at our PEM conference. So we had all of the PEM trainees in the state attend Lady Cilento, and I spoke at that conference just so people could, you know, put a face to a name and know how to contact me. But in New South Wales, there is a research manager that is part of the Predict Research Network too. So they'd be a really great port of call as well in terms of putting you in touch with key players.
And they would take calls from a med student or a resident or a registrar or myself?
They certainly would.
Okay.
Get them on speed dial. You have a question? Would you like to go to the microphone? It just really helps with the filming. So we get the sound.
Sort of similar along the same lines. I'm a junior resident. Obviously, I'm not going to be doing my own research project, but sort of what roles or how can we get involved in research sort of in large institutions where there is lots of research but sort of don't know sort of where to go or who to talk to?
Yeah. So your ethics committee will actually know which projects are currently underway and they'd be able to give you titles, so there might be something that's like an area of interest for you. Lots of organisations will have a research conference once a year. So there might be particular groups that present and you think, oh, now I want to go and speak to them. And that's how I would go about it. For us in our department too, we try and get everybody involved. So it might just be that you're a champion for one of our studies. So you go, you know, we put expressions of interest out. It's not paid work. It's just something that you're doing, you know, while you're having your stint with us. But the champions really drive things. And by doing that, they actually really learn a lot about the research process along the way.
Hello.
Long-term fan.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you have any tips for, if you're wanting to make really meaningful practice change, what procedure, what program you would recommend methodologically to ensure that what you're developing is something that is, got, you know, systematic changes that can be implemented at the bedside?
Mm-hmm. So we're actually, part of the PREDICT research network, so I sit on their executive committee, and knowledge translation is the buzzword at the moment, but what we've realised is a lot of the knowledge translation strategies are really not applicable to the emergency department settings. So we've got a study going on at the moment where we're looking specifically at knowledge translation strategies for that emergency critical care setting. So what I can say is watch this space. We actually don't know which are the best methods yet, but hopefully this trial's near finishing and we'll have some better answers.
I just would be really interested in Sarah's answer to that question too, because your PhD informed a lot of practice changes around the country. And what's your experience of that?
In terms of translating? Yeah. It's a tricky one. Around the country, Australia, in terms of my research question, was sort of converting along the way. I think there had been a trial done in New South Wales already, and people generally were having these conversations early. I joined the Children's Hospitals Australasia IV Fluid Subcommittee, bit of a mouthful, but that sort of had people from a lot of the different states and New Zealand involved, so that helped. Internationally, it's been much harder, but and I still don't really know what they're doing everywhere. Canada converted to pretty quickly. They were actually probably before we did. They were already onto this, but it was kind of cool. I guess it's having the conversations, and the world is a very small place these days. So you know, people in the UK sometimes tweet me about fluids, which is interesting. And I was at a conference and caught up with some people from Great Ormond Street. So it's kind of about getting you. That's I suppose a big part of going and presenting. So going to present at international conferences, which is heaps of fun, because you've worked on this thing in your own little bubble for such a long time. So if you have someone who has driven a specific project going, doing a few of the international conferences, getting their name out there and getting the research out there, I think that makes a huge difference. But we know that there is a lot of good research out there that hasn't been translated into practice, and it's a real shame.
Any last questions? Wow. Please join with me again for thanking Kelly for staying.